it's clearly not about football with Aaron Rodgers. If it were about football, why would he want to leave Green Bay? They've been to back-to-back NFC Championship games. Some would say they're a tweak here, they're away from winning the whole thing. Why would he want to leave? He wants to leave because he's miserable. And he wants to leave because he's miserable of who he's working for.
Actual NFL games are still months away, but this offseason has been a real live workplace drama. Julio Jones wanted out of Atlanta. Aaron Rodgers still wants out of Green Bay. And with mandatory minicamps underway this week, exhausted veterans and hungry rookies are confronting what star power looks like in the modern NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, June 9th. This is ESPN Daily. RC, I'm looking at you. You're in a very fancy setup. What is behind you? Explain your background to me.
So we got a replica of the Lombardi. We have the actual helmet I wore in the Super Bowl.
Ryan Clark is a Super Bowl winner, former Pro Bowl safety, and an all-star analyst here at ESPN.
The Ed Block Courage Award I got, which is usually just for people who like almost died or something and kept playing. I bought this little beaded helmet in Mexico. And so, like, here are books I've read.
Wait. You just really breezed past the, I got an award for almost dying kind of a thing. Is that what happened? How did you earn that award?
Well, in 2007, we played in Denver. I had a sickle cell crisis. I went from 205 pounds to 162 pounds. They ended up taking out my spleen, my gallbladder, piece of my liver. And I remember I prayed on Thursday night, like, for God to give me wisdom because I was in a lot of pain. I kept getting fevers. So it turns out, though, if you recover from that and you play, you get an Ed Block Courage Award. And that's long story short, bro.
Part of what I want to talk to you about today, man, is the messiness of the NFL, right? I want to catch up people who maybe have been hibernating through this offseason and are only kind of awakening now to just the depth of the drama. How would you characterize for those people what you've seen and what you've noticed big picture this offseason?
I think this is a different offseason. I think finally the rest of society and the rest of sports is bleeding into football. I think football will always be last when it comes to freedom. I believe the largest gap between ownership and labor as far as the major sports go is in football. And it's so crazy because I see football moving this way. And then you see a guy like Dame Lillard, who clearly needs to flex his muscle and do something in Portland as a hooper, who's not. And I guess football players are now saying they don't want to be the Dame Lillards of the world. They want to be the LeBrons and the KDs.
So the idea that you have these players who are flexing, and we'll get into the big picture player empowerment stuff in a little bit here, Ryan, but just the idea that guys are attempting it, that we're seeing Julio Jones, as you say, walk around a mall with a Dallas Cowboys star on his chest and then calling in to Shannon Sharpe's show.
You want to go to the Cowboys, Julio, or you want to stay in Atlanta?
Oh, man, no, I'm out of there, man.
He's out of there.
He says he didn't know he was on air, but people are wondering, I think very validly, how could you not know you were on air? You're doing
a
live show.
You know the time the show's on.
Right. You know the time the show's on, I presume. But what was your reaction when watching the Julio saga unfold in that way and finally ending with him getting to the Tennessee Titans?
I think the cool thing about the Julio saga was it was very quick. You know, like, it wasn't as drawn out as this Aaron Rodgers thing. It was like, Julio wants out, Julio's gone. Right. We knew Julio couldn't get out until after June 1st. June 1st hits, he's bye-bye. And I just also believe when you look at Julio, it's like we have gotten the greatest of Julio Jones in Atlanta, and it hasn't yielded us a ring. Mm. You know what I mean? So if he's going to be Julio that was often banged up last year, we already kind of have Calvin Ridley. We could draft Kyle Pitts. It's okay to let him go. I think when you talk about the wide receiver position throughout Julio Jones's time, it was, you know, Julio Jones and Calvin Johnson. And then even if OBJ got in the conversation, it was Julio Jones and OBJ, Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. It was always Julio Jones. And when a weapon like Kyle Pitts comes along, and you know you can get him at number four, it's like, okay, Julio, we can move on from you. There's a younger version. Like, if this is a guy who doesn't want to be here, we have a new coach. We're starting this thing over. Let's move on from him.
Yes, it's remarkable. And I understand why, because he was always a solution that just wasn't enough to solve the size of the problem.
Yeah, but also, I think it's hard to dislike quiet stars, right? Because they don't give you the away from the field stuff to compare to the field stuff, right? And so if OBJ never said a word, never had temper tantrums on the sideline, we would more so on this side, or fans would more so be like, it's so sad what has happened to him due to injury.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even if he's hurt, you're not mad at Julio, because being hurt is just a part of the game. And this isn't a dude that causes any problems. He's a good dude.
He has never taken a shirtless photo on a boat that I've seen on Instagram.
Never once. Never once. So you, what you going to hate him for? Because when he's out there, he just kills people. That's a fun thing. If I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, I love him. I wish him the best.
So Arthur Smith, the new GM of the Falcons, came from the Tennessee Titans, where Julio Jones has arrived this week. And look, the Titans, right? They make the surprising run to the AFC title game. They lose to the Chiefs. They then have this disappointing showing this past year in the wild card round, and they lose. It's a team that seems to be on the brink of something. What does this trade, what is this acquisition of a superstar wide receiver, what does it do for where the Titans are right now?
Well, the first thing it does is, if you're an AFC defense, you go to the weight room, right? Because now when I play the Tennessee Titans, I got Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and Julio Jones.
Yo.
I better get swole. Think about the schematic issues this presents, though, Pablo. I did a tape today on NFL Live, and it was about a six-man box. And it was a six-man box that gave Derrick Henry the ball, and it looked like six people were scared to get close to the running back, right? Then there was an eight-man box, A.J. Brown, 70 yards against the Steelers, right? Or 2 years ago, eight-man box against Washington, quick screen to Julio, 50 yards. And so that's going to be your problem. So if you're a team that's going to beat the Tennessee Titans, at least as a defense, you have to win one-on-one battles, right? There's going to be a corner that's going to have to stand in front of A.J. Brown and say, you know what? I ain't got no help. Oh, but by the way, the dude on the other side, he has to win against Julio Jones. No matter what you do, are going to be in one-on-one matchups with Derrick Henry in the open field, one-on-one matchups with A.J. Brown on the outside with Julio Jones. And you're going to lose because they are more blessed than you. You just are. And when that happens, that's some of that Kansas City Chiefs stuff we see with the Hills, the Kelseys, and the Mahomes.
So are they a legit Super Bowl contender, Ryan Clark? Are you going to go that far with where the Titans seem to be positioned right now? You're shaking your head so violently, no.
No, right? I asked a question for you, Pablo. You are a sports historian. You're super intelligent. That's why I love listening to you.
Thank you.
Was Reggie Miller's Indiana Pacers, right, a true NBA championship contender?
Yeah, I see where you're going with this. It's a great point, right? Because there is an immovable object, the Michael Jordan, and I'm going to fill in the blank here, Patrick Mahomes.
Get out.
Patrick Mahomes.
My guy, you stinking genius. that's the problem. You know what I mean? Like when I look at this team, you have to believe that, to me, this move puts them in the place to jump on the same tier as the Cleveland Browns and the Buffalo Bills, though, right? And so we would consider those guys contenders, because those are teams that you feel have the best chance against the Kansas City Chiefs. You think about what Cleveland was able to do through 2.5 quarters as long as Patrick Mahomes was on the field. Like, that was a football game, right? It wasn't a blowout. And this was a defense that was worse. Obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs were banged up front offensively, but you know, that team was on the field that game. The Buffalo Bills were in the AFC Championship. And as great as Josh Allen was last year, you can't tell me you didn't watch them games, that game, and say, these two things are different. Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes are on different levels. And so now what the Kansas City Chiefs do, they said, man, what we learned is rolling to his left into double coverage, throwing back across his body on a deep post to the pylon, Patrick Mahomes being chased from the middle of the field to the sideline can hit Tyreek Hill in the face with the ball.
It was stupid, man. That play was stupid.
Bro, how about the one he's parallel to the ground, throws the ball, gets it over the defender, and it hits Darrell Williams in the chin. And so the Kansas City Chiefs said, if we protect this dude, we'll probably win every year. And so now you're not asking, are the Tennessee Titans top 10, top 5, top 16? You're asking, can that team beat the Kansas City Chiefs? And right now, I still say no.
All right, coming up, Aaron Rodgers and how much that situation is even about football at all.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So we're talking about the ceilings on franchises. I want to pivot now to the other mess that has involved a reckoning with that question, because Aaron Rodgers has had the opposite experience, as you say, RC, right? Julio Jones, over by June 1st, done, put a bow on it, he's yours, Tennessee. Aaron Rodgers is seemingly pulling out new tricks I didn't even know were invented, wearing a man bun in Hawaii, hosting Jeopardy.
Now, here is the guest host of Jeopardy, Aaron Rodgers.
Thank you, Johnny Gilbert.
Like, I didn't think these were things you could do to create leverage, but with his situation, how would you describe what's going on there as a matter of contrast to everything else?
Personal. And, you know, it's emotional. Like, it's not a, this situation isn't about Aaron Rodgers thinking an organization has been run wrongly and kept him from his opportunity to win the Super Bowl. It's him thinking that certain people of that organization have made decisions that didn't put Aaron Rodgers first, that didn't think about what their future Hall of Fame quarterback needed, wanted, what helped him the most. And that's not okay to him. There was a report today from Adam Schefter that said on a phone call, somebody told him that he won't play and play well because he knows he's going to play well, that he won't play because it'll make the people, it'll make the executives look good. So he's willing to not play the game he's earned the right to play, that he's going to get paid all this money to play just so you don't look good. He will cut off his entire nose to spite his own face. You know, and Pablo, that's a level of personal grudge that we haven't seen. Like, think about this, right? The Last Dance. I've watched it probably more times than you've won around the horn, right? And so Michael Jordan, throughout the whole thing, expressed all of these feelings for Jerry Krause, right? And things Jerry Krause wanted. The way that he showed he didn't like Jerry Krause was by breaking or killing or dominating anything that Jerry Krause liked, right? Aaron Rodgers is in a place, bro, where he says, I'm not going to play at all because I hate you so much.
What Aaron Rodgers is doing, the personal aspect, the sit-down Brian of all of this, we have not seen this at this high a level in the NFL before.
No, you've never seen it. And normally, we understand where the resolution resides, or if no resolution resides, right? Like, we know sometimes this guy's play didn't match his contract.
Oh, we see, we're reading defenses all the time, right, Ryan? We're reading the PR defenses. But this case, where does this go?
Bro, to hear David Bakhtiari and Davante Adams today say they're standing with their friend, they love their teammate. Obviously, as a member of the Packers, we want him on the team, but we have absolutely no idea what he's going to do.
I got his back through everything, so he knows at the end of the day, if there's ever a wonder of, you know, he's lost a teammate or something because of all this come out, like, he knows where I stand. I'll stand on the mountain and scream on the mountaintop, you know, that I got his back.
That says to me, one, that Aaron Rodgers is dug in. Aaron Rodgers isn't necessarily sharing anything, but he's certainly not sharing that there's a possible resolution, right? Because if I'm David Bakhtiari and there is a resolution that isn't Fryer Brian Gutekunst, I'm saying to myself, man, you know, I know Aaron wants to be paid. I'm saying, like, everything Aaron won't say publicly that would help him, like, come back and play, I'm saying out loud.
So this brings us to this big picture, 1,000-foot view on the idea of player empowerment. And the NBA is always the thing we juxtapose the NFL with, because the NBA is the sport of, let's be honest, it's LeBron James's sport. It is the sport that he empowered. Ever since the decision, we saw the domino effect leading to how players have seized agency for themselves. The NFL has never been like this until very recently. So let me ask you this, as somebody who can be both a savvy observer of defenses and also a cynical reader of how these things get discussed. Is what we're seeing right now true power? How do you size up what the player empowerment era, as it has just begun in the NFL, what it looks like?
The NFL CBA doesn't necessarily allow for player power to be used the way it is in other sports. But what I will say is, now players, because they make so much money, like, you have to remember, Pablo, and now still everybody doesn't make life-changing money, but there wasn't as many people with life-changing money in the game of football as it has been in other sports. There aren't the guaranteed contracts of baseball, the guaranteed contract tracks of the NBA. And so, like, Austin Rivers isn't running around telling people what team he wants to play on, but he's playing really well for the Denver Nuggets right now. It's the LeBrons, the KDs, the James Hardens, the Kyries. In football, that has normally been the quarterbacks. But when the quarterbacks were always the dudes that crossed the picket line, now they're no longer those guys. They're the guys saying, you know what? I know I move and change organizations. Listen to me, do right by me, or you won't have me. This is new, and I don't think the NFL has caught on how to handle it yet. I think now also players are weighing the risk they take just to put pads on in general. The fact that, you know what, we know there's only a certain amount of plays and that can end at any time scared players, right? It was like, man, I got to do the right thing. I got to toe the line. 3.3 years is the average. Like, if I get another year, I'm lucky. I think that scared dudes from doing things, where now it's empowering them because they're saying, you know what? I don't have forever, right? I don't have two bodies. And what I'm giving, what I'm putting out on this field every day, I don't care who you drafted, who you brought in, it's doing more for the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers, I'm doing more for the Green Bay Packers than Brian Gutekunst is, and you can't tell me I'm not. And if he feels like he's not, it's trouble.
So, Ryan, the quarterback carousel isn't just about Aaron Rodgers. There have been so many names of note moving. And when you were talking about how people only have one body, I have to imagine that Matthew Stafford wishes he had two, because that dude has played through broken vertebrae, man. Like, he's gone through stuff that is extreme. And now he has landed with the Los Angeles Rams from the Detroit Lions, his longtime home. What are the Rams getting out of Matthew Stafford in 2021?
One, I think a player that's re-energized, right? Who we've watched come onto the field with his shoulder hanging. We've seen play through injuries, make huge plays when his team was never as good as the other team, and fight.
Here comes the rush. Pass to the end zone. Nice throw by Stafford for the touchdown. It's Sanu with the catch.
So you're getting a dude that fights, a dude that adds moxie, a dude that's tough, but talented, man. Like, you know, he's one of those dudes we've always watched and been like, holy cow, if Matt Stafford gets somewhere he can play, you know, this is Dame Lillard right now getting an opportunity to go to LA. This is, you know, Dame Lillard getting an opportunity to go to the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, and if he can do those things, Stafford can, with being a Detroit Lion, what can he do with Sean McVay? What can he do with the Los Angeles Rams? And I think that's what's going to be exciting about this next move.
So I want to spin you back around to your old life, RC, if you don't mind here, because I'm looking at Pittsburgh and Ben Roethlisberger, your former teammate, your former quarterback, still there, still standing tall, had a, you know, an improved 2020 season, ended up with 33 passing touchdowns.
From the 16, there's Ben going to go deep down the far sideline. He's got his man. That ball is caught by Claypool, and Claypool to the end zone for the touchdown.
But the question about his football mortality, I mean, you've been hearing that for how long now? I mean, this has been a question that gets asked every year. The Steelers lost four of their last five last season. Final year of the contract this season. What's at stake for Big Ben? What's on the line here? What are we watching?
I mean, I think this is the end for Ben. He said he wanted to make it known that he wanted another year. It's not about his legacy anymore, right? I think Big Ben's legacy is secure. For him, it's about, can he make this team not just a playoff contender, but a Super Bowl contender? Can he elevate his play there? You felt like you've gotten that from the defense. You have a Claypool. You have a Juju Smith-Schuster. You have a Johnson on the outside. You go and get the running back early in this draft and Najee Harris. Does Big Ben have enough in the tank, enough in the arm to win it all? From what I hear, he looks good, but that doesn't matter until we see live action football in September.
Yeah, the Steelers do not have that Trey Lance character who's obviously the next man up, but the San Francisco 49ers have quite exactly that. And so when you look at the Niners, RC, out west, and you see what Jimmy Garoppolo has in front of him, which is a very good team, and behind him, a quarterback who is designed to take his job at this point, a rookie who's really highly touted, what is going to happen here as minicamp rolls out? How do you see that competition unfolding?
Well, I think Trey Lance is the starting quarterback of this football team. I said it many times before. I'll say it again. What I thought most about the San Francisco 49ers moving up to three wasn't that they had a particular guy in mind to draft, but they knew it couldn't be Jimmy G. That was the decision I thought they made. It was time to move on from him. And in doing that, in their evaluations, Trey Lance became that guy. And so from what you hear, he's a brilliant guy. He's picking up the offense. But even George Kittle, other players on the team, speak about the arm strength. We obviously know he's a guy that can use his legs as well. It's about the ceiling.
So, RC, we've talked before about how, as a former athlete, you feel the old rhythms inside of you. You still feel the schedule. It's hard to undo all of that wiring. So here we are. It is June 9th. Mandatory mini camps are underway among a bunch of teams in the league. I was trying to explain to my wife what a mandatory mini camp actually is. I don't really understand it, to be honest.
If you're an NFL veteran, it's not much fun. You know, it just takes time out of your day where you feel like you could actually be getting better at the game of football, whether it's training or doing things personally. But for young guys, it's awesome. It's a chance to compete. It's a chance to show coaches what you can learn, what you can do. It's a chance to just be who you always were. I think as you get up in your years, you understand that football is not won in June. But it is a time to be around the guys. It is a time to build that chemistry. There's no more diverse or fun place as far as people from different places and different backgrounds to be than a locker room and to learn. And when those people come together and you're fighting for one thing that's always enjoyable, this is a part of building that.
But it sounds, let's be very blunt about this, RC, it sounds like you're really glad to not be at a mandatory mini camp right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely football useless, for sure.
Ryan Clark, thank you for being of great use to us on ESPN Daily.
My man, have a good one, dog.
A Okay, up next. The most popular Women's College World Series is underway right now, so we talked to Jessica Mendoza, fresh off of calling Game 1, who knows exactly how these players feel.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Long before Jessica Mendoza worked for ESPN, she played softball at Stanford. And by play softball, I really mean destroy the sport of softball altogether, becoming a four-time All-American, an Olympic gold medalist, and the school's record holder in batting average and runs and hits and home runs. So after Florida State beat Oklahoma in Game 1 of the College World Series last night, 8-4, we knew exactly which National Softball Hall of Famer we had to call. Jessica, you just called a game that was incredibly exciting tonight. This is a series that has been highly anticipated, but I just want to start, for those who know nothing about any of this, how this works. The College World Series for the women, it's always in Oklahoma. There were tons of OU partisans at this game. What was the atmosphere like on the field there?
It was unbelievable. I mean, you think about it, anytime you have, you know, Oklahoma playing for the championship in their home state and just the entire state of Oklahoma here in the biggest crowd that we've had in Oklahoma City for the World Series.
So how would you begin to describe what Florida State did tonight as the lower seed in this meeting and also enemies in hostile territory?
Right, totally enemies. You know, it's crazy about Florida State because if you look at Oklahoma and, you know, even if you've been kind of like following along, not even closely to the college softball season, you would know that Oklahoma has just been dominant at the plate. They have the best offensive numbers that we've ever seen in probably the history of the game. And Florida State could not be more different. And then they get to the World Series and it just completely reverses. And it's just the beauty of a championship, right? You play outside of yourself, everything comes together, you know, all the cliches, right? So to see Florida State come and be the first team to score the fourth inning where they put up 5 runs, I mean, we were in the booth calling the game going like, you know, I was looking at Beth and Michelle. We're just like, what? Like, this is crazy. And you knew Oklahoma was going to come back and score some, but it was really just the Florida State offense that didn't allow them to even outscore them.
So, you know, offense, Jessica, firsthand, you are one of the greatest college softball players that has ever lived. It's safe to say that even though you may demur the compliment, what does Oklahoma's clubhouse, what does their locker room sound like right now, do you think? Because game 2, of course, is do or die for them.
Yeah, I think they're definitely feeling the pressure. I mean, you want to say, oh, it's loose, and I'm sure they're comfortable, and I'm sure that's what they're trying to portray, is we're fine, we score runs, but this is a team that's lost, you know, they only lost twice during the regular season. They lost their opener here, but were able to rebound. It's just a team that's completely dominated when you look at the course of their season. And they, I feel like right now, have been the team that everyone expected to win every single game. And so when they lose in the fashion that they did, I know there's some pressing. Like, there's definitely not this like, hey, we're fine. Like, you're saying those things, but anyone who's competed knows you feel a little bit of pressure when you're number one.
And on the other end of the equation is a coach that you know well, Lonnie Almeida, who was one of your coaches in college. So take me into what you imagine her huddle is like on a night like tonight. What is she telling your team?
You know, it was pretty incredible. She was emotional after their semifinal win on Monday night. And I think because of everything this team has gone through and the struggles and the fact that they literally were that team that just kept believing, and to see them do it in the way that they've done it, I think for her, it's actually not telling them a whole lot. I think that's the point. She's an amazing coach. Like, having known her now for the last 20 years, having played for her, I know that there isn't a whole lot that she's needing to do now besides scouting and just like the normalcy. because this is what she's done for every single one of these girls' entire career. So whether they're a freshman or a senior, she's prepared them for this moment. And whether it's because the athlete in them that understands what they need to do within the game, or just the emotional aspect of what she's brought to them confidence-wise to prepare them for this national championship stage.
This College World Series has drawn a viewership that is bigger than any other in a decade. And when you're calling these games and you're imagining, you're trying to explain to people who don't know the sport as well as you do, what exactly the pitch is, pun intended, I suppose, the pitch is for them to, hey, tune in, watch this thing. How are you articulating that?
What I find in college softball, and honestly the sport in general, is, you know, it's similar to a sport in baseball that people know well. So the rules and everything easy to understand. But I feel like it's better because it's quicker and there's so much more passion. And that's the thing that I hear from everyone who's watching it for the first time, is the emotion, the cheering, the fist pumps, and honestly the quickness of the game. Like, it's just constantly going. I mean, literally watching, like, from one defensive play to a home run 5 minutes later, to back-to-back home runs from Oklahoma, to plays at the plate where someone, you know, is almost knocked out. I mean, it's just constant action. And people crave that in sports. They don't want the in between, the lull. They want to see that passion. People actually want to win. And these women have been doing it for a long time. But why we're seeing record-breaking ratings is because I feel like this sport has never been showcased better. The best athletes, the best of parity. We're seeing teams like James Madison here and Odyssey Alexander. It's all over the country. It's not just the same few schools.
So looking ahead to Wednesday night for game two, Jessica, Oklahoma has so much talent on that team. What do they need to do to settle the score here?
It's the stars. There's so many bats within this Oklahoma lineup, but I look at one, and that's Jocelyn Allo. She's the National Player of the Year, only the fourth time in 20 years of this award. So 20 years of this award, only the fourth one to be a non-pitcher. What do you have to do to be a non-pitcher to win the award? You have to ridiculously rake. And that is what she's done. 32 home runs this year. She'll come back next year for her senior year and blow up the Division I all-time home run record. So that's who's hitting for Oklahoma. I can name you a million more hitters in this lineup that are ridiculous. But when you come to the last game of this season for this team, for Oklahoma, possibly in game two, all eyes turn to the player of the year and Jocelyn Allo.
Jessica Mendoza, thank you so much for sharing your passion with us on ESPN Daily.
Can you tell I'm a little pumped up? You're a fan now, though, too. I can tell. You'll be tuning in.
I'm in for game two. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.